Welcome to the Full Potential Podcast. I am your host, Nick Wagner Sr., and every week I interview guests that share career stories, ideas, and experiences to empower and inspire people to reach their full potential. If you enjoy the episode, please subscribe on your favorite podcast platform, including Apple Podcasts, Google, and Spotify. Thanks for listening. Vivek Nigam, welcome to the Full Potential Podcast. Thrilled to have you on the show and look forward to our conversation tonight.
Thank you, Nick. Thanks. I really appreciate that you do this. It's actually interesting. One of the things that I always talk about is how we gain strength from our differences. And I love that you have such a variety of guests on here and really honored to be a guest of yours today. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate you making time. And I have a diversity of guests on purpose for that exact reason. You're absolutely right. I have people like yourself that have been in the corporate world and the startup world. I have people from nonprofits. I have people that, work in the public sector, the private sector, really all types of careers on purpose, because I want everyone to really just see what's out there. So sure. I think we'll have a great conversation about your journey, because it's been super interesting on what you've done.
Thank you.
Over your careers. But I always like to start, Vivek, with my question, like who is Vivek, right? So you meet someone at a networking event, or you're at a conference, or you're running into someone for the first time. When they ask who you are, how do you answer that question?
Yeah, let's go to our values. I would say, first of all, I'm a father. I've got two great kids, and I'm a husband. I'm a friend, and I hope my friends would say I'm a friend. And I like to think of myself as a learner and a teacher. And in my journey, that's one of the things I've always kind of explored. Maybe I love that you use the term zigs and zags, and it's just it's something that's taken me sideways on some occasions, just to explore some different things. But yeah, that's basically how I would characterize myself.
Yeah, and I love how you lead with that you're a father and a husband, and not what you do for work. So I appreciate that. And I say zigs and zags because I'm a perfect example that my career path was not one linear way, right?
Sure.
And I think there's a common misconception that to be successful in your career, you have to know what you want to do since you were a little kid and fulfill that and just go up, and it couldn't be further from the truth. And I think we're going to hear that from you today. So why don't we actually start going back, because I love to hear, even though I don't think you have to know what you wanted to do when you grew up. Mm-hmm. I love to hear what people wanted to do when they grew up. So what was the thing that you wanted to do when you were a little kid? When you grew up, what was that job you wanted to do?
So since the time I was 5 until I was 18 and freshman in college, I wanted to be a doctor. And it's funny because people's perceptions, even today, like most of my life, I would walk into a hospital and people would think I'm a doctor. It's just funny. One day, actually, my mom was in the hospital and I was leaving. It was like a Saturday. And this guy walks into the elevator with me, my father, my brother there. And he just looks at me and says, "Oh, what are you doing here today?" I'm like, "Do I know you?" And he said, "Oh, you're on the other side today." I said, "I'm visiting my mom." So yeah, maybe I should have been a doctor, but no regrets. When I was in college, I realized that I liked biology. I liked sciences, but I had gotten my first computer when I was in sixth grade and didn't think much of it. And my brother and I've got one older brother, and he and I spent all this time on this Apple II Plus computer back in 1980, right? And we were styling because we had disk drives. We didn't have cassette tapes. And so I probably lost a lot of your audience right there, but that was back in the day. That was something else. But we spent, of course, we spent some time playing games, but we spent a lot of time just learning and being part of the thing, learning AppleSoft Basic, doing these types of things. I just never thought of it as a career. And it was my cousin, actually, one day who said to me, "Why don't you go study computers? You guys have been doing this forever. And you can go to med school anyway if you really want to do that." And so I switched. And that was quite a journey in itself. And and then I just kind of never turned back. I've had my moments where I said, I wonder if I would have been a good doctor. But, I don't know. It's like I've loved my career the way it's gone. And I've loved where I've transitioned to and all the zigs and zags and turning left when I should have turned right. And that's, there's a lot of fun and a lot of learning in that. So I've really enjoyed that. But yeah, I want to be a doctor. And part of that was also my my mom was diagnosed with lupus when I was very, very young, and I was probably 4 years old. And when that happened, so they gave her 5 years to live, but she lived long enough to see her grandson graduate from high school, and she passed away about 5 years ago. And it wasn't the lupus that got her; she died of cancer. I mean, go figure. But yeah, so that was a driving force for me to say, you know, I see her in and out of hospitals and things like that, and all this care, and I wanted to go fix something, right? I wanted to go be that guy. But yeah, my life took me a different direction.
So you mentioned, and I'm sorry to hear your mom. You mentioned college, and you went to college, and you for computer science, computer engineering, University of Hartford. Was that expected that you went to school, went to college after high school? Because, and I always ask this question to my guests, because I have plenty of people on here that have been super successful not going to college. I have plenty of people on here who've been successful going to college. And sure. I feel that direction that people take is usually driven a lot by their parents. So what was the expectation for you after high school?
Thank you. You know, I wouldn't be right if I didn't spend a little time talking about my dad. So my dad, pretty amazing guy, and really lived a pretty interesting life. He left India. So I was actually born in India. I came here when I was four. He left India when I was a year old, and to come here to study, because he, you know, he found an avenue to get here. He came here to study and realized when he got here that he could have a better life, right? India back then, you know, in the 70s and 60s was not the same as it is today. Today's a very different place. But the opportunity here was just immense. And, you know, I never realized how hard that was until I got much older and I was married and I had kids. And I can't imagine being away from my family, my wife and kids, for 3 years, right? And that's just, you know, it's just something pretty tough to do, right? And a strong person to do. But he ended up, you know, he was big into college, right? He was doing a bachelor's here, and then he already had a bachelor's from India, but he was doing one here. And then in order to stay in the country, he had his own student visa, so he had to stay being a student. So my father has three master's degrees. Right? And, right, he's just inventive and figured out, hey, this is what I need to do. So he did it. He went to school. He worked. Eventually, we came over here. He kept going to school and doing things like that. We ended up moving a lot because he had to go switch and do another master's over there, go study over there. So I think when I was in third grade, we moved four times. His expectation was very high, and there was not even a discussion. There was no discussion about the fact that you're going to graduate, you're going to go to college. And my father said, no, you're going to keep going to college until you get a PhD. Oh, and wow. Yeah, that one was a little tough, because what happened is he was pursuing a PhD at one point, and because my mom got sick, he ended up never finishing. And I think that was always something that he felt like, you know, he would have loved to do. But college was definitely not an option. Doing a master's eventually made sense, but for me, it was really a practical thing to do. The PhD, that was something I was never able to fulfill.
So. I mean, you still have time for the PhD.
Yeah, that's true.
don't rule it out yet, right? Right. So you went to school for computer science. I find it funny that you never even thought that was a thing, right? You never even thought that was an option, even though you were always, you know, working with computers and learning computers. So where did that take you? Because I know you've had multiple startups. You have one now, but you worked for yourself previously.
Yeah.
So tell us that story about what you finished school and what happened.
Yeah. And this is where the zigs and zags really start. So I actually started at UConn, and, you know, went to college like a lot of kids and said, man, I know everything. And, you know, for a semester, I was pretty good. I knew everything. The next year or so, maybe not as much. So I ended up eventually having to transfer. And I thought about it and said, well, I can continue here, or maybe I should make a change. And I transferred to University of Hartford and kind of got my head together, right? And it's really a matter of, like, get your focus back and figure out, what are you trying to do? Is this the life you want to live? Is this the career you want to have? And I wasn't really sure exactly what the career was, but, you know, as I was making the transition from biology, you know, pre-med to engineering, I remember at one point, like, you know, I thought, this is easy. I'm smart. I can do anything. And I struggled, right? And I actually had a professor once that said to me, you're in the wrong field. You should quit and do something else. And I kind of looked at him and I got pissed off, right? Yeah, right. I mean, it's, he wasn't wrong, but it was kind of a jerk move for him to say that, I think, being an educator. But it was a good learning experience for me. It basically told me, I got to work at this. And I mean, not immediately. Immediately, I said, this guy's a jerk. But after a little while, it was, when he sinks in. So I transferred. And it really then just focused on computer science. And I ended up with a double degree in computer science, computer engineering. And that just honestly kind of happened by accident. It was just those things that when I started the engineering, I think a part of me was getting back at that professor saying, hey, guess what? I can do this. But part of me was just like, I just really enjoy this. And I remember I wanted to do a university scholar project at the University of Hartford and went to my advisor. And he kind of looked at me and smiled and said, okay, go write up a paper for me and tell me why you want to do this and what you're going to achieve. And he would say that to people. And I found out a couple of years later, he said, I usually say that to people because they have these bright ideas and they go back and give them some work to do and they don't do it. They scare away. He said, but you didn't scare. And I didn't. So and we ended up doing a study in robotics and control systems and all that. So spend a lot of time in the lab and just doing something completely different, right? I mean, I didn't grow up with playing with wires and electronics and things like that. And I'll tell you, in the lab, there was a lot of smoke that happened, right? A lot of stuff that didn't go right, didn't burn out, that you burned up. But then when you ask questions, you learn. And so going through all that, right, it just kind of started the, hey, let me try this, let me try this, let me try this. I came out and it was a really interesting time to graduate at the time, right? On the one hand, there was a lot of companies, they were laying off people left and right. The co-op I did, literally at the end of the co-op, they offered me a full-time job and I wasn't done with school yet. And so I was still basically a going into my final senior year. But economy was terrible. And so I took it and I said, I'll just finish school part-time. So it took me 5 years to finish school and that was fine. But I was working at the time and really gave me a lot more focus in school. But the interesting thing was when they offered me that full-time job and I, finally took it and I got there as a full-time employee, they gave me a desk of a guy that was helping me, coaching me throughout the summer while I was a co-op or an intern, I guess we would call it today. And they had laid him off. I mean, he was an older guy and it just like, it set with me really poorly, right? Just said, there's so much to do out there, but you don't want to be at the mercy of just this. And that was just one of those foundations. So I spent a couple of years there. I was a nuclear engineer. I was there to do software, but my official title was nuclear engineer. And then I said, in order to do the software, I really need to study this. So I studied the nuclear engineering. I did all these things. But, I had good skills and I was finding that out because the industry really needed software people at the time. And every now and then I would just raise my hand, just kind of look out there and see, go for a couple of interviews. And one day, I had an offer. I wasn't sure I was going to take it, but guess what? They had another round of layoffs. And I said, hey, I'm going to go. So I went to one of the big bosses and said, one of the big offices and said, listen, I have a job offer. If I can leave, would you save someone's job? They said, yeah, this is literally a headcount thing. So I said, I'm leaving. And so I left, spent 10 months at that next job. And then I got a call from Southern New England Telephone, of all people, the telephone company. They were building interactive television. Now, for people today, you think about interactive TV, you'll think about Netflix or Amazon Prime. In 1994, there was no such thing, right? And the internet was not in a place where you could stream this type of video over the internet. It just wasn't there. So we were building this thing to send over the phone lines, the ATM switches and high speed phone lines and to set top boxes on the old cable boxes that used to sit on the TVs and our test movie was Don Juan DeMarco. I watched that movie 700 times, I think, and as we're testing this, but it got me the taste of, wow, this is high tech, this is cutting edge, this is something new. And the internet was really starting to take shape at that time, right? People didn't have domain names, all this stuff, type of thing, but it was starting to take shape. And I just decided I want to be part of this, right? I grew up in Southington and I always felt like I was sitting on the sidelines watching the parade go by, right? I mean, it was just the nature of the area. I think it's different today, but at the time it was very traditional. It was Pratt & Whitney was the biggest thing and things like that. So, but I just wanted to break away and go do that. So just I had an opportunity at one point, got introduced to some people down in the DC area, and my wife and I went down and met with them, and she just looked at me and said, "I think this is what you got to do." And I joined them. This company was called Localize. It was a startup. I mean, complete startup. I was the fourth person there, and I talked to them, and we shared some things. I worked from home for a little while from here in Connecticut until my wife finished school, and then we went down there. And I showed up first day at the office in like a, this is, dress casual. So dress casual for me meant, I wore shoes, I had nice slacks on, and like a golf shirt, I think it was. And the CEO walks in shorts, sandals, and a t-shirt. I'm like, okay, time to reset, right? And so a little while later, right, we all reset, and we're just having a blast, right? We're there all the time, and couple years, as startups go, they go up, they go down, things happen. And one point it was basically, hey, we're gonna shut up, right? We're gonna shut down, right? I think we don't have any more money. We're not making it. And me and one of the other guys, one of the original founders, we talked to one of our investors and said, we still think we got something here. And he agreed. And he said, I'm going to give you some bridge funding. However, I want massive changes in the company. So in the end, we went down to four people. He became the CEO. I became this chief technology officer. And he said, I want you two guys, and you guys figure it out. And a couple of years later, we sold that company to AOL. See, the journey is really interesting. Like, I had been in these corporate environments and saw all this stuff happening. Now you're in the startup. And I always love to say, when you're in a startup, the beauty of it is that anytime you sneeze, the whole company moves just a little bit, right? And because you just have that kind of impact. And it was great. It was awesome. I mean, we used to, when we took a break, sometimes we would throw a football up and down the hallway, right? As people working, it's just like me and one guy were just talking about stuff and doing this. And at the end of the day, we'd always have a Quake tournament, right? Everybody, we had all these games running on our network, and shut all the lights down and put the headphones on and go have a shooting fest, right? But it was a blast. Working 6, 7 days a week, it was a regular thing. But it was us against the world, and it was just so impactful, so charging that we just absolutely loved it. The funny story was that we got a call from AOL one day, and they wanted to go to lunch with us, and we said no. We said, and it was kind of funny because, like, you think about it, AOL at the time was still a very innovative company. To us, they were like this dinosaur, this gigantic monster, right? It was we don't need you. We're good. We're on our way. And so we hung up the phone. And a couple months later, they called us back, said, "You guys should really talk to us." And in the end, they ended up buying that company. And we went through the acquisition, went through all that type of thing. Perspective, right? It was a matter of perspective. When I got to AOL, you're walking down the hallway. There's a showcase. There's a like a display case with a painted picture, like with all these signatures on it, and it was this giant dinosaur. And it caught my eye because, like, we used to say, like, we don't want to get bought by AOL, that dinosaur, right? And we looked at this, and basically, at one point, Microsoft wanted to buy AOL in their youth. And Steve Case had gotten the whole company together and had them sign this dinosaur, said, "We will not be eaten by this dinosaur." I just thought that was great. It's like there's always a bigger fish, right? So it was just that journey was amazing. My 1 year that I spent at AOL was just a blast because the passion that people had, how much they cared about what they were doing. And anytime I had an argument with somebody, it's because I was running at 100 miles an hour this way, and they're running at 100 miles an hour this way. And we just met in a place where now there's a conflict. And it was never anything negative. It wasn't like, hey, I'm trying to make my career this or this and that, whatever. It wasn't anything out of the ordinary. It was just that I have a mission, you have a mission. We're just at an intersection, and there's a little conflict. Let's go figure it out. So that's, just thinking about the differences between a large company that's been around for 150 years versus these small companies. And I mean, it's just so amazingly energizing.
No, I love that. I love that story. I love, and to your point, I have a lot of early career individuals that listen to the podcast, and AOL is not known today like it was at the beginning of the internet. But to your point, I mean, AOL was a juggernaut. I mean,
That's right.
it was
They were
the
the Google
internet
of the
at
day.
one point. Exactly. So the fact that you said no to when they called you makes me chuckle. And then the fact that you ended up getting bought by them. I mean, that's an awesome story. So I love that. When and look, I think, I'm an entrepreneur too. I owned a business and sold it, and it's interesting because I think, and you know this, that once you work for yourself and do a startup, you just think differently for the rest of your career,
100%.
simply because everything is not guaranteed. You talked about the ups and the downs of a startup. It can be very emotional working for yourself compared to like you then went and worked for Aetna and Travelers and The Hartford, which are just massive,
Completely different.
Fortune 100, health, property and casualty, health services companies, which you don't have that emotion that you have from a startup. So I totally feel you, and I love how you kind of illustrated that to my audience, because I think you gave people a peek into the window of what it looks like of working in a startup. So you mentioned you went to AOL, which is a pretty common thing when a company buys a startup. You go and work for the company that purchased you for a little bit. So I get that. You then did, like I said, you went from Aetna to Travelers to The Hartford, which are, three insurance companies. You did, probably about 20 years at those three companies, doing all sorts of different jobs. And now you're back to being, a startup founder. So I want to ask the question. You left AOL, so you left the tech world. It looks like you came home back to Connecticut, where you were from, to work in insurance. I mean, how different was the culture going from working for yourself to working for what at the time, right? I know people laugh about this, but at the time, AOL was one of the biggest tech companies in the world, right? To working at three different insurance companies. Like, what? How did the culture differ on that journey?
It's a hard transition, and both back to there and coming back, and I say it's a hard transition, but it's not. In actual mechanics, it's not a hard transition. It's here, right? And it's that journey of like, hey, what am I doing? It's that internal struggle with yourself, the argument with yourself that makes it difficult. Now, interesting thing is, when I left AOL, I had five new startups I was going to do. I was ready. And I was working with some people. We had five ideas. We're going to go do this. Okay, thank you, AOL. We've done our time. Loved it here. We're moving on. And 2 weeks later, September 11th happened. Right. So now we're in Washington, D.C. We had a beautiful house in suburban Virginia, and not too far from Dulles Airport. And now you're sitting there and watching, and there's no planes flying. Right. It was a really strange time. Right. And impactful for a lot of people, impactful for us too. I now had two small kids, and my daughter was just a baby, and it's just one of those things that you look and do some retrospective and say, what do I do? And do some introspection and say, hey, what's right for us, and what are the things to do? And as I mentioned before, my mom was sick, so I said, let's move back to Connecticut, or at least get closer. When we left Connecticut, I never thought I'd be back. I actually thought the tech world was going to take me to San Francisco or to Boston or DC and these places. I had an offer in Boston, but we chose to come to Connecticut. I worked for Aetna. It was actually a good position, doing architecture, getting back to tech, and really thought I could make a good impact. And there was more positive than negative. These are great companies, and they've got some wonderful initiatives that they're doing, and they're getting more and more innovative as we go. So as I'm finding out, and as I found out during my career, it was interesting. When I was at Travelers, I had applied for a position internally, and I didn't get it. And I came in as the person who was doing the hiring. He said, "You came in second." And so I said, "Well, I want to know, what am I missing?" And we talked about it. So we went to lunch, and he's telling me all about this, and he was talking about what he liked, what he you know what the other guy that they ended up hiring, what he was better at. And the guy ended up becoming my mentor. because I just enjoyed the conversation with him so much, and he offered to help. And throughout my time at Travelers and even beyond, for a while, I reached out to him, and he was really great, right? Just gave me a chance to really learn. But he said something funny to me. He said, "I don't get it. First 10 years of your career, pretty cool. Next 10 years, not as much." And I always thought that was kind of funny. But the biggest impactful thing for me was trying to understand, how do I navigate the social environment, right? How do I navigate, from, meeting with so-and-so and then having lunch with this person, and really making people aware of who I am and what my impact is. And I found the work is just your table stakes, right? You gotta be good, right? You have to be doing a great job. You have to be doing those type of things. You have to be making an impact. But there's a next level there of just trying to make sure that people know who you are and people recognize who you are. There's an effort that you need to do. There's a networking that you need to do in order to grow to a certain level. And I started fighting with that, right? And I'm a big believer in the authentic self. And by the way, I apologize, my conversation isn't going to go as exact just like my career went. But there was a TED Talk which I listened to years ago. It's pretty old now, but if people have a chance to find it, I think it's really worth finding. It was Neil Pasricha, and he talked about the three A's of awesome. And I absolutely love this, the three A's of awesome. And I always forget one of the A's, so I actually wrote them down. But it's awareness, attitude, and authenticity, right? But you got to listen to TED Talk. It's 18 minutes long. He does, I mean, he's just amazing. He just does an absolute wonderful job about this, and talks about his life story, how he got there. And what I felt like was happening to me is the awareness I was struggling with, but I was getting it, right? Just understanding where I am and what I'm missing, and I was trying to understand that. Always tried to learn how to be better and what the things to do. The attitude was there, but I felt like it was changing. And I don't think it was the right attitude that I wanted. I was still committed to doing hard work, and I was working hard and trying to do good things. But the authenticity is the thing that I started to miss. And this is something you just said. Once you are an entrepreneur, once you do that, it's always in your blood, right? You always think that way, right? And feel something a little different. So, fast forward after that conversation, I started to really think, and I was talking to my friend Andrew on the phone one day, and he's asking me if I wanted to go try a startup. And I remember saying to him, "Andrew, you don't understand. I spend most of my day trying to figure out how I can get to the next level, how to get to the next title." And there was a little pause, and he's an old friend of mine, and he said, "Am I the only one that thinks that's silly?" I said, "Actually, here's the thing. I stopped chasing the function and why it was important and what I could do as an impact, and I was starting to chase a title or chase the money, and I became unhappy, right?" So I started to make changes, and I moved around a little bit internally, and I found I was really chasing something, and I ended up going to the Hartford, and Hartford, wonderful company, wonderful people, bounced around a little bit there, and eventually I just said, "It's time. I want to make the transition back." And as hard as it was for me to transition from a startup back to corporate world, leaving the Hartford and knowing that I'm not going to have a paycheck for a while was really hard. Was really hard. And again, it was hard up here, right? I made all the plans, I did all the put all the things in place, but it was something that I knew I had to do, and I felt I had to do. But it doesn't come without fear, right? I mean, that's there, but fear to me is not unhealthy. It's just a thing, right? It's a thing that guides you. And I made the change. And after about 2 months, as we saw how things were working, I kind of looked at my wife like, "Why didn't I do this sooner?" Right? And everything's working. We figured it out. And then tax time came around, and I'm looking at our tax returns, and I looked at it and said, "Boy, we made a lot of money last year. I should go back to work." She said, "Don't you dare." Right? Right? Because it's a different
It
attitude. It's a different way that you think.
it's interesting,
Yeah.
and you mentioned the fact that, I mean, you had a great job, right, at a great company, paying you great
Great group.
money, and you decided to leave it. And I think for people that haven't worked for themselves or have never been an entrepreneur, That almost seems like a just this just what is why would you ever do that, right? Like
correct.
Like what's wrong with you, Vivek? Why would you do that, right? And it takes a certain type of person, and I think a certain type of, I guess the word would be arrogance, to think that you can do it, right? I mean, like you're betting on yourself essentially. So, and look, I think clearly family is a big part of your life, and your wife was on board with this, which is huge, right? Because you cannot make a change like that in your career without having the support of the people that you're that you love with. So I love that. So tell us, you had all this great experience at these three companies. You left this job just to be a startup founder again, to start Be Remote LLC. Tell us about your current venture. Like, what are you doing? Sure. Why did you do it? And I think the interesting thing is, you know, just share with us like what it's been, because you left in the middle of COVID, right? So not only did you leave a job, not only did you leave a corporate job that you were doing well at, being paid well, you did it in the middle of COVID. So what are you doing and how's it going?
I've not always made the smartest decisions in my life, but that's okay. This one was not one of the negative ones. This was a positive one. It was the right time. And COVID and everything in place, just having little faith in us, in humanity, in our leadership, and you know, our nation leadership, that we're going to get through all this. But it's actually an interesting time, because everybody's working from home anyway, right? You had some freedom, some liberty. I could have kept working, and kept trying to do a side hustle. Right? People like to talk about that. I just decided at this point it was the right time for me to jump and do this the right way, and let me go after it, and get this started. So the impetus to this was, and I talked about it a little bit, you know, in companies, in corporations, people who are socially adept tend to do better, right? Mm-hmm. People who know how to network, who are comfortable talking to people, comfortable going out afterwards, just building relationships, they do better. I mean, I think that's pretty clear. People who don't, they can be very skilled, they can be very useful, they can be doing great work, but they tend to get left behind. And for me, I never felt that was right. And part of it is just personal, right? My father was never that person to be networking and things like that. He worked hard, but he got passed up. And I remember going, he got passed up for promotion after promotion, right? It happened many times. And for the city, different environment, politically charged environment, like many of us are. But you need to be good people. And not about, some people are just introverted. Some people have come from a different background. Some people have different work styles. Some people are more analytic, right? Things like that. So I came up with a term. I said, I want to level the social playing field. And how do we do that? So that's where this started. And at the time, we're really struggling with some people being in the office and some people being in a different office or working from home, because now you're hiring nationwide, you're hiring worldwide. Mm-hmm. And because the talent's everywhere, rather than having to move people. So now this is started. So we said, let's manage that piece first. Let's manage the meeting after the meeting. Let's make a virtual water cooler. Let's do those type of things. Let's just find ways for people to engage on a better level. And it kind of grew from there, right? We just started saying, okay, well, let's look at this piece. And now we're starting to say, well, maybe we can find a better way to communicate company culture, or talk to HR and the human resources challenges that people have. And so we built this platform really for people to engage. And it really was a response for me personally to say, I had to figure out how to not be that guy in the corner and start to reach out to people, start to be social. And it doesn't come naturally. You don't just turn it on. It's not like you're born with it. You learn, right? And I didn't have that mentoring until I was probably in my 30s and said, let's start learning this. And so that's where, you know, finally made this transition. I said, you know, and during COVID, it just, you know, really started to highlight more of these challenges. Although on the flip side, the COVID was kind of the great equalizer, right? Now everybody's at home. There's no more of this, hey, two people walking out of the office and having a side conversation. But, you know, eventually we're going to go back. And so it really, Beer Remote was designed for that. We've got a product out there called Reteam that's really designed to, and my favorite term is level that social playing field, right? And try to get people who are not so social to speak up. And for people who are social, maybe they can show them the way, right? This is how we do it, but trying to find a better team norm. And it was something that you know, we see it all the time. You walk into a meeting and 10 people in the room, but two people do all the talking. And mm-hmm. we're trying to find a way to make it a little bit more level. Seeing some good success so far. So it's been a pretty interesting journey. I've learned an immense amount doing a lot of research. And you know, the other thing that we're seeing is, like, over the next couple of years, it's possible that we'll see job movements like we've never seen before, right? Yeah. After COVID, because people have learned things. And so there's all these type of things that I'm hoping we can help in just a little way. So
it is interesting. I think, like many of us, when COVID started in the spring of 2020, none of us really knew what was this going to look like, right? Where was this going to take us?
Sure.
And from an employment perspective, we know that many people have, you know, unfortunately, they lost their jobs, or they were furloughed, or, you know, they were, you know, laid off temporarily and then brought back, right? I mean, it changed the job market so much. Sure. and how Absolutely. We work so much. So the fact that you're right in that space on, you know, really the future of work, I think is a great place to be, because I think it's going to be, I don't think we were, I mean, I think the way we work has permanently changed, right? And I think you realize that.
I think so,
and I just love the fact that you were recognized and openly admitting that you can be great at your job, and you're not going to be as successful as someone who's great at their job and knows how to network and build relationships, right?
That's
and,
correct.
You know, I think for a lot of my audience that are, you know, a lot of millennials and Gen Z, you know, growing up with technology, it's a gift and a curse, right? Because it's a gift because you have everything, every answer at your fingertips with Google, sure. But it's a curse because, you know, a lot of the younger generations, you and I are a little bit older than the Gen Zs, they haven't needed to interact yep. in person or, you know, on a phone call or with video sure. as much, right? Like, because you can text and IM and things like that. And so I think this whole idea of, you know, leveling the social playing field, I love it, because I think it's
Thank
I think
you.
We're only going to see more and more of it. So I think that's a great call out.
Okay.
I always am fascinated by people that have done a startup, gone to the corporate world, and gone back to the startup. And it's almost like it's just in your blood, and you can't shake it, right? Like you just have, like you said, you had to do it. You felt like you had to make this. You just weren't happy. So it's just interesting, just, you know, how it's so ingrained in you as a human. But I love the journey. So we always close the same question, Vivek, and I appreciate you coming on and sharing your journey.
Thank
because
you.
So many words of wisdom, so many great stories. I loved hearing it. But I always ask the same question for every guest, is like, what is the one piece of advice that you would give my audience that's helped you reach your full potential? So sure. Why have you been successful at a startup in multiple Fortune 100 companies, and now at another startup? Like, what is that one thing that you would share that's helped you be successful?
Sure. You know, I pondered this question a little bit, and I hope you'll give me a little bit of a liberty. I'm going to give you two, and I think they work together.
Sounds good.
The first one, and I mentioned this earlier a little bit, is that we have a horrible word in the English language, and it begins with the letter F, and it's called failure. And if you can rewire your mind to get rid of that word, just eliminate it. Literally think about any situation that you have. Some achieve the outcome that you expected, and some do not. Both are equal learning opportunities, right? Both are equal learning opportunities. If you can eliminate that word about failure and putting yourself down and say, why did I fail? What happened? Eliminate that and just say, well, why did this not come out with the outcome that I was expecting? I think that to me is the biggest one. The second one, I like to say, and for a guy like me who can't dance, I'm going to say, go dance, right? In other words, jump into the game, you know, let it flow. And, you know, I tell my kids this too, you know, you have so much more to offer to this world than you realize. And what a shame it would be if the world didn't get to see it. So step in, give it a shot, go, and do it. I mean, you know, I love people who say dance like nobody's watching, right? But go out there and do it. Hopefully, your experiences are like many people that I know, and you'll surprise yourself, and you'll be happy, pleasantly happy.
Yeah, I think that's well said. And failure is a dirty word, and it's, I think it's important. I love that you brought it up, and I actually think it's important to try to tell kids to not worry about failing, right? Because I think a lot of us in school are taught like, well, you're bad at that, right? You got to be better. Like you failed, right? Like you didn't do well, right? And I think that's where a lot of it comes from, right? So I think kind of like to your point, rewiring your brain. We talked about that a lot tonight. Will help that. So thank you so much for joining. Great
Thank you, Nick.
conversation. We're gonna link to your LinkedIn, so if people want to connect with you, hear more about what you're doing, hear more about your journey, they're happy to do that. And we'll also link to your BRMO LLC website as well.
Thank you.
So we'll link to both of those in the show description. And just want to say thanks again for making time, and I wish you the best with your latest entrepreneurial adventure.
Thank
And
you.
stay happy and be well.
Thank you, Nick, and I appreciate you having me on today. I'm so glad you're hosting this platform, helped me personally, and I hope it helps a lot of other people.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Full Potential Podcast. If you'd like to hear more interviews, please subscribe to our podcast on your favorite podcast platform, including Apple Podcasts, Google, and Spotify. You can also connect with us on social media, on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. And don't forget to check out our website, fullpotentialmovement.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing, and be well.